The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Greetings, citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in Geek. I'm joined this week by my usual co-host, Adam Sudursky. He's the Sci-Fi Wire editor-in-chief, but I'm also...
Hello.
Oh, no, you just jumped right in. But wait.
I'll wait.
Thank you.
Sure.
There's another person. Karima is at a convention right now, and so we're not going to talk to her today, and that's okay. We're going to talk to somebody else, I guess. It's the Sci-Fi Wire features editor who is making this great... You make a fart face at me. Why don't you just introduce yourself, fart face?
I just want you to know that I waited. It took a lot out of me, but I waited the entire
time.
You made
this face, which in a way made it seem as though you didn't wait at all.
Well, that's your problem. But
okay.
That's your perception, man. I'm Jordan Zachrin, the features editor here at Sci-Fi Wire, and I am joining the podcast again, pinch hitting for Karima, who is probably way more, I would say probably charming and listenable, but what can you do?
I mean, listen, I certainly like her a lot better than you, but my dad will be very happy, and that's all that really matters.
Absolutely.
Listen, there's nothing that happened this week.
That's right.
Nothing to talk about at all. And so you might as well just stop listening now.
Yeah.
We're just going to talk about nonsense. Nothing happened. There's no movies that came out.
Let's talk about the NFL draft.
Yeah, good idea. What about XFL? Can we talk about that?
That's not around.
You about Kanye. No, I'm just kidding. Let's not discuss that ever again.
What did he do? What's
no, I'm not going to talk about it. We're not talking about it.
Quality. Listen, so Avengers Infinity War came out, and we're going to talk about that and pretty much primarily and nothing but that. But first, we're going to do this thing that we do every week where we talk about things that we personally and selfishly were into because we're all egotists. And so
we're selfish like that.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Adam, what were you being selfish about this week?
I am going to bring up the same thing I brought up last week, which is Legion on FX. I finally finished season one. I'm way behind, but I've been streaming it on Hulu. And man, it has become one of my favorite shows that is on right now. It's so bonkers, crazy, and surreal. And there is a scene I plowed through the last couple episodes over the past couple days, and the penultimate episode of the season, episode 7, has a whole sequence in it that I would not say my jaw was literally on the floor, because that would be like very cartoonish.
Yeah, but I would say you would go to the hospital after that.
Yeah. Unless you're just lying on the floor.
But metaphorically speaking, my jaw was on the floor because it was so bananas.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Yeah, that I was... First of all, I went back and watched it twice in a row because I just had to take it in again. And secondly, I couldn't believe that someone actually put something like that on television. And... it's the second to last episode of the first season. And particularly, like, gosh, there's so much that's good about the show just in terms of its creativity and the way it tells its story, visually especially. I got to give a huge shout out to Aubrey Plaza, who is amazing in it. Like,
my favorite Plaza.
Yes. If your perception of Aubrey Plaza is just April Ludgate from The Office and think that that's kind of that disaffected thing is all she can do, boy, does Legion blow that out of the water, because the range that she puts on display, the physicality she does, it's amazing.
And, yeah, that's the only thing that Jordan can do, but...
All right, we're not going to turn this into this whole dynamic here with you guys, where I'm just sitting here watching
The only thing I can do is recognize Aubrey Plaza from Parks and Recreation.
Is that true?
No, I was saying that you're also
disaffected.
I said
The Office, April Ludgate from The Office. God, I'm horrible.
You're a bad person.
You know, she was great, speaking of, Aubrey Plaza, in a movie last year that came out, not a ton of people saw, but it was called... Ingrid Goes West.
Oh, yeah.
You like that, huh?
Oh, I love that movie. You didn't like it?
I didn't see it.
Yeah, there you go.
is it anything like Igby Goes Down?
No, it's less... It is just as dark, but
it's
less...
It's what I think of whenever I hear that movie. It's like it's they sound like the same movie.
I always think of 5-0 Goes West.
Wow.
Yeah, The American Tale.
Very different.
I feel like that's a great movie trilogy.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, you should watch all three in a sitting.
I think about that scene in Igby Goes Down with Bill Pullman, where he's like in the shower, and he's like, there's so much pressure. I think about that scene a lot. Anyways.
Wow.
So watch Legion.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and it's, I don't know. I could go on. I could ramble for half an hour about my feelings on this show, but it's just, it's so, I think one of the things I've said is that I kind of appreciate about Fox and how they've handled the X-Men universe is that they've shown a willingness to take chances and play with format and play with style in a way that your Marvels, even your CW shows, which, you know, I think the CW shows are great, but they're all kind of, they have a certain feel that is very similar. And Legion is like no other superhero show I've ever seen. You know, Mark Fox put out Logan, which was a very different kind of comic book movie. They put out Deadpool, which kind of played with a lot of the conventions of comic book movies. So I got to give it up for that. Like, they've shown a willingness to experiment and stylistically, and I really appreciate that. So watch Legion. Season 2 is out now. I'll have to catch up on that later because I don't have cable TV. But,
Cheapskate.
I know. But yeah, I've been enjoying the hell out of it.
We do endorse cable TV, though, here at the Sci-Fi Network.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. Very important.
Please have
to
cable.
Yeah.
I don't. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's me.
Do as I say, not as I do. There you go. Nailed it. Very good. I like those shows, too. I like Fox because they make stuff that seems like it could be really, like, you know, like masturbatory, like really up its own ass, but it doesn't really feel that way for the most part to me.
Let's see how long that lasts as they get bought by Disney.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other conversation. Anyway, Jordan, I mean, I don't care, but I'm sure somebody does. What's going
on
with you this week?
Really
yeah,
cares.
My dad really cares. Listen, Dad, here's what Jordan's been up to.
So I'll say two things. One, because Adam brought up a TV show he's really digging. I'm going to do the same. It's not quite genre, so I'm going to keep it very brief, but the HBO show Barry with Bill Hader is the funniest thing and best thing I've watched all year. I mean, Atlanta, these two like quasi comedies that are really funny but also tackle bigger things. So I've been digging Atlanta, but I caught up on Barry last night, and it is one of the funniest shows in the world. And the character NoHo Hank, and he's just this like hitman, or he's a stooge for a hitman, but he's just really a Renaissance man. He's the absolute best. So I say it's not getting a ton of buzz, but if you have HBO or you have your brother's HBO password or whoever that works, go watch that. The other thing that I'm geeking out on, and this is much more appropriate for this podcast, is Infinity Gauntlet. I had never read that series, and I should read that.
Jim Starlin.
Yeah, I said I should read that, and I didn't finish it before seeing Infinity War because I saw it Monday. But I'm finishing it up now, and I'll say that the first two issues really milk it. He must have written a 4-issue thing, and they're like, oh, we need to do this over 6. So it's just like Thanos walking around saying, I'm the shit. I don't know if I can say that. I'm sorry.
You can.
But but now that I'm in like a thick of the battle stuff, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a good story. I really like Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've read it, but it's a quality book. Like, you know, people always point to Secret Wars because that was like the first Marvel event story. In many ways, it was like the first like really big event story period in comics. But man, for my money, Infinity Gauntlet is still easily one of the best of those. Certainly, I think maybe still my favorite Marvel one.
I really like Mr. Death, too. I mean, I've been there, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Where you're in love with death?
Yeah.
Where you're obsessed with the personification of death?
Yeah, and it just keeps you
having
to do.
Just a sexy skeleton lady?
Yeah.
Is there any other kind of skeleton lady?
Damn, girl.
Yeah. Well, so it's, you know,
get
just,
it.
He just going around killing people, trying to please her. I mean, look, you know what? I'm not going to incriminate myself. This is a podcast for fun, happy people.
Yeah, I don't know. I find it relatable, though, for sure. Sorry, my wife.
All right.
So
what did you get on?
No, we don't need to know.
Oh, we don't know.
No,
okay.
I'm just kidding. Danny.
Hey.
Hey, Danny.
Hey, Adam. What's up?
I would like to know something.
What is it that you would like to know?
What have you been geeking out about this week?
What?
I know.
You're asking me?
It's a surprise question.
What have I been geeking out about? Oh, somebody asked a question on Facebook, and because it's related to somebody who is, I think, at least genre adjacent, if not genre specific in many cases, I count it as valid. Now I'll ask this question of each of you and see if you have an answer. What is the best Bjork song?
Oh, I don't know.
Wow, great. Very
My
helpful.
My personal favorite, and I can say this now because we looked it up after we talked about this the first time, Human Behavior.
Human Behavior is a good one.
I love Human Behavior.
Oh, yeah. I hate Human Behavior. Like, the way that humans behave.
I hate actual human behavior. I like the song Human Behavior.
It's a good song.
Yeah.
My favorite is Bachelorette, which is off of Homogenic, which I think is the best Bjork album. And there you go. There's that. I spent a lot of time listening to Bjork and having very serious conversations about Bjork.
Bjork,
which
is
hard because her name is Bjork.
Bjork is a beeline spot for me.
I see what you did there.
Can I tell you a really great story about Bjork, though, that you will still enjoy? This is for all the kids who only know that Bjork has a silly name and sings songs and is kind of odd.
That's what most people know.
The one other thing that you need to know is that she's very bad about paparazzi. She hates being recognized. She does not want to be bothered in her day-to-day life, which I find to be very relatable. When I was in college...
Yeah, I'm sure.
When I was in college, yeah, because I'm so famous. Anyway, so I was in college. We used to hang out in this place called Piermont, New York, which is like a little bit upstate, kind of a wealthy town, very pretty, lots of like nice houses and stuff. We just drive around and look at the stuff and go to this little sidewalk cafe and get food afterwards. And there was this one place. It's like a tiny house, but on this huge piece of land, like way set back. There was a waterfall. It was beautiful, but also kind of haunted looking. And we always called it the Bjork House. And we were at the sidewalk cafe eating French onion soup. And out from the back of the sidewalk cafe is Bjork. And I like stopped mid-slurp because I saw Bjork. She like, we constantly talked about this place, the Bjork House. And lo and behold, there was Bjork, but for real.
Bjorking around.
Were you on drugs?
No, I wasn't. I mean, unless there was something in the French onion soup, which is entirely possible.
And did you talk to her?
Did you tell her to Bjork it?
Wow. No, but I did. I was like frozen staring at her because I was so shocked.
Because she's from Iceland.
But obviously, she did not understand the nuance of the concept of we talk about this Bjork House thing. And so she was very angry and stared at me through the glass as she walked out. Like she was going to punch me in the face.
There's no way this actually happened.
It absolutely did happen. And after that, I would tell people that Bjork punched me in the face.
Look, I went to my second elementary school. It was called Benjamin Franklin Elementary School. And in fifth grade, I was walking down the hallway to go to like a student council meeting or something.
Did you meet Benjamin Franklin?
No, but I thought I saw him. Like I must have hallucinated him. And I can still see him looking at me in the stairwell. But I didn't meet Benjamin Franklin or actually see him in the same way you did not see Bjork.
Okay, I absolutely did meet Bjork. I don't know why you would compare a living woman with a dead man.
Because why would she be in some froofy town upstate?
All right, anyway. Boy, that was it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so about Avengers Infinity War. We all saw
it. This is a movie that is happening.
Yep, it's out right now.
Yeah.
People have seen it. We've seen it.
So to set this up, we're going to have a semi-brief, spoiler-free discussion. As spoiler-free as we can be. If something's been in a trailer, we'll talk about it. Like, really, yeah. Really basic plot points that everybody already knows, we'll talk about. And then at a certain point, we're going to say, spoiler zone, get ready, whatever. And at that point, you can go, if you have not seen the film, go see it. Come back and listen to us. Discuss the final details.
Yeah, there
details.
You go. Okay, when we get to that point, you know how you say welcome to the Phantom Files? Can you say welcome to the Spoiler Zone?
I should say you should get like a jingle for Spoiler Zone, but I'm happy to provide
it. Just say welcome to the Spoiler Zone, but say it in that way that you say it, that terrible, awful way that people like listening to.
All right.
Okay, so,
I said we're not going to, this podcast is not going to be you guys ripping on each other for an hour, damn it.
Okay, this is the reason why you're not allowed on it, but we like each other. That's why we do this.
Yeah, I know.
Just to confirm, is us being friends.
Don't worry, Danny's dad.
Wow. Yeah, don't worry, my dad. All right, so here's the general question. What did you think of it, Adam? Bold.
It's like the neutral planet that from Futurama. It's like, tell my wife I said hello. Like that's no, I think that it does a lot of tying into the Marvel universe that we've known. There's a lot of payoff for people who are fans in terms of getting to see characters that you've been fans of for a long time interacting in ways that you might not expect. Overall, it feels more like a fan service delivery system to me than an actual story and film. I've said this on Twitter. And I will say it again. It felt to me like the first movie I'd ever seen without a single discernible character arc, where a character was different from the beginning to the end of the film, other than I was alive and now I'm dead.
So wait, have you seen Suicide Squad?
Yes.
Because that certainly has absolutely no plot arc whatsoever. No, but no,
there
arc.
Are character, there is character development in that movie.
Debatable.
No, but for better or worse, I'm saying in terms of like quantitatively, is there a character who at the beginning of that movie feels differently, acts differently than at the end? Yes.
I also don't think Adam's positively comparing Suicide
and
Squad
I certainly,
to
it's a definitely Avengers. I enjoyed it a lot more than I enjoyed Suicide Squad, so I will say that. But like, no, so the character problems I had an issue with, there are some just internal logic things that I don't necessarily agree with. And then a part of the problem I have is that I felt like the movie sets up some really big stakes, but because of the very Marvel Cinematic Universe franchise model that allows it to exist in the first place, those stakes are kind of undercut ultimately.
I mean,
So that was a thing for me, is like, I, and that's happened before. We talked about when Black Panther was coming out. Like, we've seen at that point, we had seen Black Panther in the Avengers Infinity War trailer, so we knew T'Challa was going to be fine by the end of this movie, but Black Panther did so many other things well and brought so many other things to the table that that kind of didn't matter. And I think that Infinity War is a lot about the stakes, but they're not really there. So that's my brief summary.
And look, these characters have been around in many cases like 50, 60, 70 years, and they die and they are reborn, and they die and they're reborn, and they're recast with different people in the comic books. And I think comic book readers are used to that and they're okay with that. And you know, a lot of things about comic books make good movies, but that lack of stakes, just the inherent nature of the medium, does not translate as well to movies, I think, is the problem. And again, we also know that there's going to be another Spider-Man movie. There's going to be another Black Panther movie. So we know that the movies are going to function like the comic books, but that takes away from the movies in that way.
Right.
So I think like that definitely I felt that way, especially because we know there's also a part two to this. So whatever happens here could just be reversed. And I assume, without spoiling it, I'm sure some of that will be. But I think, you know, if we're quoting our tweets, I would say that to me, this movie was I love ice cream. All right. Like, it's like my favorite food. And so it's like getting a gigantic bowl and you go to Ben and Jerry's or whoever and you get a scoop of every single type of ice cream. You get every single topping, you know, whipped cream, sprinkles, for some reason you get the walnuts, whatever. And you take a bunch of bites, you eat it, and you're like, there's some really good bites in there. Like, you hit the flavors you really like, you get the toppings you really like. You know, some of them have mint chip and chocolate mixed well together. But the problem is when they get a little melty, they start flowing together. You know, they become a little flavorless. Your mouth gets really cold. And you're like, I don't really know if I want to keep doing this because there's not much here for me. And I think that's kind of the metaphor.
But then you've committed, so you have to eat the whole thing no matter what.
Yeah, and like I enjoyed a lot of parts of it. I laughed a lot. I think like what's incredible is that Thor has become the best Avenger in my mind when like his first two movies were . And so there's a lot of good moments to it, but it's really long. It's really long, and there's a lot of MacGuffin chasing. And there are basically, it kind of repeats itself over and over again. And we can get more to that in the spoilers section because I don't want to ruin it for anyone. But not only are the stakes kind of, you kind of see them happen over and over and over again. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's definitely enjoyable. And it's definitely the first Marvel movie that you have to see other movies for. You know, and I think that's, you know, it's a lot of people have seen the movie. So it's not like you have to watch all these obscure French films to get Infinity War. But there definitely there's a bit of knowledge you need, they assume, because there's just too many characters.
No, I mean, I think if you really get into the works of Jacques Demy, and especially
I say Godard. Oh, it's got to be Godard. I mean, no, come man, on, this movie has elements
Umbrellas
of Godard.
Umbrellas of Cherbourg, to me, if you have not seen that before you see Infinity Wars, then you are nowhere.
That's right.
There you go.
Literally everyone just turned off the podcast.
Danny, what's your overall impression?
It was good. It's fine. I mean, good is a strong word. It was fine. It was, I mean, you know, it's the first half of a story that has taken 10 years to get to telling. And I feel like there's just, like, it's not a movie. It is Avengers the Ride for 3 hours. And yeah, I mean, like, I think that there is some plot, there's some plot development, some character development. Like, I don't think there's any huge arcs, but I mean, like, the question of how necessary that is to a movie of this type, I don't know. Like, that I'm, like, not 100% sure about. I thought it was, like, I smiled a lot. Like, I had emotional reactions to this film, and they weren't me going, like, screw this movie. So that was nice. And there's plenty of movies that I go in and see, and there are moments where I'm like, now I'm done, and I just completely switch off, and I can't watch the movie anymore without just being cynical and angry. I didn't have any of those. So that's, yeah, I mean, it's fine. Like, I'm very curious to see what the other half of the story is.
It is. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing, you know, we can say, and it's not a spoiler really, is that this is not a contained film in any, even if, beyond that you have to have know who these characters are and everything ahead of time, like, story-wise, it is absolutely part one of two.
Well, and here's the thing about it. We work in an industry that kind of trades in obsessive, and we love it. People love these movies, and they love every little detail. And that is both how, you know, we pay a lot of attention to that on our website and just in our conversations day to day. But they always want to know what's next, right? That's become the hallmark of not only Avengers, but Star Wars, DC movies. Everyone wants to know what's going to happen in the next movie, what's going to happen in the movie after that. And so this movie is sort of a reward in a way for all of that. And then when you get to actually watching it, you're like, oh, okay. Because for me, I like the smaller Marvel movies, the more contained ones. Thor Ragnarok is one of my favorites. You know, Black Panther was great for so many reasons, but also it pretty much always stayed in Wakanda other than when I went to, like, South, you know, Korea for a minute. And I really liked Ant-Man, surprisingly, because that's a small contained story.
Yeah, that's the one that my wife hasn't seen, and she was like, what will I think of it? And I was like, I enjoy it. I actually like it better than a lot of Marvel movies.
Yeah, I mean, that big train sequence at the end of the mini train, like, that was great. And so for me, it's, I mean, it's cliche, but for so many people, it's about, like, the destination for these movies. Yeah. You know, what's going to happen next? Because they care about the characters they've read for so long. And they want to know, will this match up to the comic book I read? But for me, this one was all about, you know, I like the Marvel movies because I enjoy the ride of them. You know, that's why Guardians of the Galaxy, who I knew nothing about and didn't really care about, you know, what's going to happen to them in the future, I enjoyed so much. It was the actual ride of the actual journey of the movie. And I think this movie has a lot of good moments in the journey. Like, there's a lot of good stuff. You know, I don't think it's, I think Thor's very funny, and I think the Doctor Strange and Iron Man interplay is good. I think there's a lot of fun moments in it, but because we're so focused on that, what's going to happen next, I think that this movie is so much of that, we kind of lose sight of the fun that the other movies have.
Yeah, I mean, when I say, you know, character arc, I talk about the development. There are some great character moments in this movie, I thought, in terms of, like, you know, we talk about Thor. It feels very much, thanks to Ragnarok, like they've found the best version of Thor on screen, which is this, like, kind of jocular, you know, beefcake guy who doesn't necessarily, you know, might be a little dense, but kind of has hearts in the right place, all that stuff. And they, like, that bouncing off of the Guardians of the Galaxy that we know is so fun and entertaining. And, you know, we've seen Tony Stark and Spider-Man team up, so that we know that that's fun. Bringing Doctor Strange into that mix, there are a lot of good character, like, moments where it's like, oh, because we know who these characters are, we can see how the chemistry works. But it's just, like I said, it's the journey isn't there. This is a movie that, you know, Avengers 1, I have my problems with. Avengers Age of Ultron, I definitely have my problems with. But there was more going on in the stories of those. It's like, yes, killer robot in Ultron, but it's also about Tony Stark and his hubris and his dealing with PTSD from the first Avengers movie. Avengers, you know, it's these
don't
characters.
Don't forget Hawkeye.
What's that?
And don't forget Hawkeye.
And don't forget Hawkeye. Oh, this movie,
they sure did, yeah.
And it's like, you know, these characters in Avengers coming together and learning to get with each other, like, in addition to dealing with the threat from Loki slash Thanos, this movie is Thanos wants to get the Infinity Stones, and that is bad, and we should stop it. And that is literally all that is going on, I feel like, in this film.
Yeah.
And that's for better or worse. I mean, if you're into that story and you don't need anything else, great, you know, but, like, I was looking for a little more beef.
Yeah, there's a lot of MacGuffin chasing in it. And I think that, ironically, reading Infinity Gauntlet, he starts out with the stones, you know, and that doesn't happen in this movie. I don't think it's a spoiler alert, but maybe if he'd started with a bunch more and it wasn't all about that chase for the first for the whole movie. I mean, I know they need to make it into two movies, so maybe that's why they did it. But I would say that, like, that's also part of it. There's just so much chasing and running around going on. And so it makes it harder for there to be an actual character arc because there's so much exposition.
Yeah.
What was your fan interaction like? What was it when you were watching the movie? How was everybody else reacting to the film?
So it's interesting. Jordan and I were at the same. It was a press screening, a critic screening mostly. So those tend to be a little
more
subdued than your average, you know, especially opening night fan filled film. I mean, but I will say that from my perspective, it was certainly more.
Oh yeah.
Animated than your typical critic screening.
There was a lot of clapping and cheering, and like. Yeah. I mean, I've been to plenty of film festival screenings at Sundance and Toronto and wherever, and that's a given because the filmmaker's in the audience, you know, and that's the world premiere of it, and no one's seen it before, and that's just the way that goes. You have to, like, shower the filmmaker with applause. But the Russo brothers were not in the room, as far as I know. No one from the movie, as big as it is, was there, and because they were all at the premiere that night in L.A.
Yeah.
And so, unless Chris Evans snuck in because he wasn't there. But the point is, like, we didn't know that. And so I was a little surprised by the amount of clapping. People, like, really like to... But at the same time, the tweets from critics afterwards at like 1:30 in the morning, they were so ecstatic. It kind of blew my mind. I guess these were a lot of geek critics. Also, this wasn't like the New York Times, which did not give it a very nice review.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Did not give it a very good review, the New York Times. It sounded like A.O. Scott had an existential crisis while watching it. but yeah, I was surprised by the animation of the crowd.
Yeah. But Danny, you went...
I went to an actual. So they have at certain theaters, they have like the earliest, which you can pay extra money for the 6 o'clock fan event.
Really?
And here's the thing: I really nothing appeals to me more than an early showing. Grandpa really wants to be able to get home and get to bed, so I did not go because I thought, oh, I can't wait to interact with fans. But I mean, it was kind of like an added benefit. Because there were people in costume and, you know, and people that were there with, like, all of their gear and really, really, really excited. And so, yeah, I mean, like, pretty much from the word go, I mean, like, when there were trailers going, it was like people were still, like, you could feel were kind of lit up, ready and waiting for this movie to start. And the whole movie, I mean, it almost felt like a conversation between the audience and the film, because people, I mean, people would speak in full sentences. There were like paragraphs coming out. I will say this is amazing. At the end of the movie, as the credits started to roll, someone said, "Wait, don't leave," as if the whole crowd didn't know. And everyone was like, "Hot tip, thanks." And then it was just this whole, like, at that point, like, everyone's just talking about throughout the whole credits. And then there would be like a moment where it's like, is there? And then there's silence and there's more credits. Yeah.
There's
and
so
then,
many visual effects companies in this alone.
Yeah. It was a very long credit sequence before you finally get to surprise something at the end. But, it really was this almost like a dialogue between movie and audience. And I think that that is a thing that this particular type of movie really benefits from.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it made huge money last night. It's going to make record-setting money.
Oh,
this
do we
weekend.
Have the, I'm going to look
it's
this
like
up right now.
$39 million last night, and so it's going to set huge records. But this is the 19th movie in the marathon, and most people don't have time to watch if they haven't seen movies to like watch them up to that point. Like you can watch a few movies and be familiar with it, but I wonder if because you need to know so much in this movie, ultimately it will sag a little bit, like second to third weekend.
Oh, I don't think it's going to have the legs of like a Black Panther at all. I think it's going to open huge and do really well, but I don't think it'll last, you know, 5 months the way Black Panther has.
But that's the thing is that like, so the question has become, if we're going to talk about money, is will it bust to, well, it'll definitely bust $200 million. I think at this point that's pretty much
opening
a guarantee.
Weekend?
Yeah. But the question is whether or not it'll go all the way and do like what Star Wars Force Awakens did, which I think was like over $250 million.
Yeah.
If it does something like that, then they are golden and it doesn't matter
They're doing fine. They're going to do fine.
I wonder also, so my girlfriend has seen like 3 Marvel movies and she's going to go see this with me, A, because I should see it again. And she's a good person. And B, because we have MoviePass. And I'm curious how much that will impact things.
Well, the MoviePass thing is already changing, right? Like, I don't know if
we're starting now, but we have MoviePass.
You have the original one, yeah.
Yeah, and so we can go to as many screenings as we want. Not that we go to see this more than once. I think she would leave me. But I think that I'm curious to see if people who don't really care that much about Marvel, because those people exist. Not the ones listening to this podcast, but those people do exist.
Yeah.
Will go because they can go kind of, sort of for free, or their ticket's already been paid for.
That's interesting. Yeah, no, I don't have a real sense of that. Sorry, Adam.
No, go ahead. I was going
to... No, I don't have a sense of that. I have to be honest. I can't really tell. I mean, like, Black Panther had a specific kind of legs, right?
Yeah.
Because that was a movie that came out and people thought, I personally have to do my part to make sure that this thing is a success.
Well, that's also so
people
good.
I mean, it was a great movie,
and
but people had very specific stakes in it.
To Jordan's point, Black Panther was a movie that you could jump into without ever having seen the Marvel movies before and have no problem following. Like, I went with people who had never seen the Marvel movie and they loved it, you know? So this is not that movie. This movie is very much a payoff for 10 years of movies that's come before. So it's a very different animal.
Yeah, I mean, plot-wise, obviously, there's, you know...
I mean, look,
you don't
man,
know what's going on.
I feel like... here's what I don't know. I mean, I don't have anybody... Like, my wife went and saw it with me, and she also... I mean, she's a big Marvel fan, but has only seen a couple of the movies. Like, she hasn't seen the last two Captain Americas. She has not seen anything beyond Iron Man 1 in that. Like, she hasn't seen most of them, to be honest. But, like... She can fill in the dots. Like, that's the thing.
But she's
a Marvel person,
so she knows these characters already in some context.
She saw Falcon and was like, that's probably Falcon. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. She could put it together. But I don't know. I mean, like, I wonder if you'd only seen, like, two or three and you walked in and saw this movie. Like, if you saw the first two Avengers movies and that was it, would it be enough for you to be able to follow?
I mean, I don't think so.
Really? I think it's mostly spectacle, so I don't know if it's really an issue.
Like you said, the plot is pretty basic.
I think
you'll
be able to follow it.
The plot is easy to follow. It's just the characters. I feel like all the character development has happened in previous movies.
In a way that, like, so, yes, that is true. Thor has changed a lot, and Captain America has changed, obviously, questioning everything. But I think that, and I don't think this is veering to spoiler territory, like, the interplay is still fun, whether you know them or not. Like, you can just kind of grasp that Tony Stark and Doctor Strange are kind of assholes, and Peter Parker's young. And so I think, like, that interplay is fun, and it's fun when Thor is talking with Rocket.
Yeah, I think that the short form is there. I just think even if you'd never seen a single one of these before and you don't know these characters intimately, it's so surfacey.
Yeah.
I feel like, you're going to get more out of it if you've watched them all.
But it's also so long. Someone who doesn't care about it is going to go for 2 hours, 40 minutes.
But to me, my point is that is a bigger, more pressing issue, because I was looking at my watch because it was so goddamn long.
Because I probably feel worse, I think, about the movie than you do, Danny. But in terms of the length, I didn't necessarily feel it.
I
didn't have to pee.
It's such a lot of fetch quest.
Yeah, there's a lot of lag. I felt like, and we can talk about this more when we get into the spoiler territory.
Momentarily.
But I felt like there are teams that I really liked watching together, and there are people that I just didn't care about, probably because I don't care about their movies as much, you know, and because I'm invested in certain characters more than others. So there was definitely time where I was like, all right, just get back to, you know, Thor and the Guardians or, you know, whoever. And there's some times that people were just not on screen for like 45 minutes at a time. And that's tough. I mean, you know, how do you pace that and how do you put those all together? And that's inevitably going to be difficult, but there's definitely lag time in it.
And before we get into the spoiler stuff, I want to, on a non-spoiler level, talk about Thanos and see where you guys are with that. Because Thanos, like, obviously he first appeared in Avengers like 5 years ago, 6 years ago. But this is like the first time we've actually seen the character fully interact. And I was kind of taken aback by how central he is to the film. He's in a lot, and there's
the protagonist.
He gets a lot. Yeah, he's like the protagonist of the movie in a lot of ways. And you know, I have certain mixed feelings about his design and you know, the CGI and all that stuff. I wanted to get your guys how you felt about Thanos overall as a villain.
Well, the thing is, so without spoiling it, I mean, people who've read the comics know that, like, he wants to wipe out. They said in the trailer, he wants to wipe out half of humanity. And,
half of the universe.
Yeah. So, right. I don't really care about humanity. And so...
Selfish.
Yeah. Well, what can you do?
This podcast is going to go out into space.
Yeah, that's
some
why.
Some aliens are going to hear it. They're going to be like, oh,
are we on the radio?
Didn't you hear my opening where I say, greeting citizens of Earth and all
so
beings,
we have
both extraterrestrial and interdimensional? I'm trying to be cool to them.
Let us understand these humans, and then they're going to hear that and declare war on us, and it's all going to be your fault.
Are they going to go through like half an hour of this?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So we're on the radio.
Sure.
Out.
Yep, that's how it is.
That's how it works.
Right, anyways, he wants to kill a lot of peeps. How about that? peeps. He wants to kill a lot of peeps. Right. And we'll get into it in the spoiler section. But they really try and justify it and make you kind of understand why he wants to. And I think that fell a little bit flat. And his emotional journey fell a little bit flat to me. I mean, at the same time, you know, it's hard to make you really root for a villain. It's really hard to do. Even like the best characters, even if the best performances, like, you know, in Dark Knight, like, he puts an incredible performance as Joker, but you're still not rooting for him. So I get that it's really hard to do.
Yeah.
But I thought, like, them trying to give him, imbue him with emotion and reason kind of fell flat in a way.
I don't know. Here's my position, and we'll talk about it a little bit more again as we get into the spoilers.
We should just get there.
Are we going to talk about it more when we get to the spoilers, guys?
Maybe. I will think about it. I just wanted us all to be able to say it at least once. So I think a lot of people right now are feeling a way, some moments. They'll look at something that a person will say, and they will think it is so terrible, and they will think, this is so indicative of X group who thinks X, Y all the time. Wouldn't it be better if they were all gone? And often that's like almost like half the world you're talking about. You're talking about the other half.
Indiscriminate is the problem. If he was targeting people,
no, we'll see. Well, there you, well, there's, that's a whole other conversation. But my point is that, like, yeah, I look at him and go, I think the sympathy that you can feel is the same reason why you can know that he's wrong. It's just like when you get so fed up with someone's ideologies that you think are dangerous or harmful to yourself or to others, that you might reach a point where you go, oh, wouldn't it be better if people like that just didn't exist at all? And then you go, but that's no solution. That's actually terrible. Genocide is literally never the answer. But
that's
the
official take from Who Won the Week. Genocide.
Yeah, there, genocide is
never the answer.
Genocide
is bad. And that is really what the movie is about.
We take the bold stance that
genocide is bad. But we're arguably living in a time wherein, like, you kind of need to remind people that it is.
Well, I think it's, well, yeah, that. But also, like, I always take it as, like, power structures make people bad also. You know, people are, like, horrible and dumb and racist and
all
that.
Also in there, too, though.
Right, yes. But what I'm saying is that, like, I wouldn't even want half the people wiped out. I want, like, everyone in power wiped out. Now we're getting political.
Okay, that's a very different topic of conversation. Anyway, do you want to say it? We're going to enter the
Welcome to the spoiler zone.
Thank you. That was great.
Yeah.
Right.
Good job.
How do I not open a podcast?
We need
like
horns go like ooga or something some crazy radio effects. Anyway.
Okay. So
spoiler alert, dudes.
And when I say that, I mean that we're going to literally skip to the end of the movie. And then work our way backward.
We're going
to
read the credits.
Yep. Here we go.
Adam's got IMDb open.
Okay. Jordan Zacharin as Nobody Cares and everybody else. So I guess somebody cares.
That was so good.
Yeah, it was really quality.
That was so funny.
Yeah, it was great. Anyway, so I was very shocked that people were shocked. Because if you set up a person and their goal is to wipe out half of everything, and you know that this is the first half of a story, you should probably assume they're going to get their way. And yet, people in my theater were so mind blown. And there was literally no point in the movie where I thought he wouldn't succeed.
I think it's because people forget at the time that it's one movie in two parts, you know? And I think if it was just one movie alone, it would be shocking. But I think people see it as one movie alone.
I think it's who they wiped out that let people. I think honestly, if spoilers. Oh my God, spoilers!
We're in the spoiler zone.
Thank you. Thanos snaps his finger and wipes out half the life in the universe, and we get to watch as half of the characters on the screen that we've been following this time basically dissolve and are raptured more or less. And I think if it had been Steve Rogers or Thor or Tony Stark, the reaction would have been a little different, but it's T'Challa, it's Peter Parker, it's half of the Guardians of the Galaxy, and I think
we have sequels announced.
Yeah, well, that was the thing for me, and that was like, it's a bold move, but it's not, ultimately, because just last week, they were saying we have another Black Panther movie in the works. We know Guardians Volume 3 is coming. Spider-Man Homecoming made money, and it was Tom Holland's first movie in the role, so we know there's no way he's not coming back for more. So
they have like 30 movies on their contract.
So like, it's immediate to me, as much as I appreciate what they were trying to do, it, it it's immediately undercut by the business model, and that drives me crazy.
If you kill Captain America in this, you have him disappear. You don't know if he's coming back for the next one.
Right.
But all right, but here's my point. Okay, once again, because it's a story in two halves.
Yes.
They killed off the characters that they killed, and then here whom remains? I mean, there is some side stuff, some lessers, but really what you walk away with is Captain America still alive, Iron Man still alive, Thor still alive, Black Widow still alive, Hulk still alive. So other than Hawkeye, who I am assuming is also still around, basically what they've done is they've pared it back down to the original team. It's the original Avengers, and they're going to have to go and figure out how to manage and undo this thing that happened. And I believe at the end of the second half of this story, and I don't think this is a controversial statement, a lot of the original Avengers will die.
Right.
Sure. I mean, like, look, Chris Evans says he wants out, and Tony, and what you call it, Robert Downey Jr. has made, like, I think $1 billion from this franchise.
Yeah, I think he's probably good. I think he's probably okay.
Yeah, he's working on his Dr. Doolittle franchise now.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so I think I think that probably Thor will live because Ragnarok was such a big hit.
Right. Yeah, and I think that to me, Chris is happy to continue.
It just bums me out so much to even have that discussion.
To know that,
yeah. Well, I guess you know, like we're talking about whether Thor will be in it or not because or will continue or not because his previous movie made money, not because it makes sense for the story, not because it would be dramatically impactful. And that to me is what makes this model of this shared universe and this franchise model so frustrating. It's just like, we know what the stakes are and aren't based on stuff completely outside of the story. And that's it just robs it a little bit, I think. And that's, you know, why, again, like a movie like Logan, which I know I'm sound like a broken record, how I praise that film, but you had no idea who was going to walk out of that alive. And that made it interesting. And you just don't have that here.
There's also that Danny says, like, and I think it's a good theory that the original Avengers are going to all team up and,
yeah, no, I agree. I 100% agree with that.
But wouldn't it be more bold if some of them died, right? Because we couldn't even guess that. So as much as it is kind of insane that the new ones died, like we can now guess why. Also, I'll say there are several people who died not from the, you know, finger snapping, like Loki. First scene.
Yeah, so I think there are a few. Like, I think Loki's going to stick as a death. I think Vision's going to.
Heimdall will definitely stick.
Heimdall is definitely. Vision will definitely stick.
Yeah. No one
cares. But you and I, Danny, have a disagreement as to whether Gamora,
I don't know,
will stick or not.
I don't
think she will. I think they're going to walk
out. I have no idea. Well, I don't know about her or Loki. Really, the only, like, I would say I'm positive Heimdall is going to stay dead. And I think just because of the amount of makeup that's going to go into being Vision, that, like, maybe it's not going to be worth it for Paul Bettany to stick around.
Let's also note that, you know, in less than a month, we have a Han Solo movie coming, and that is, he died in Force Awakens. So just because they die in this movie doesn't mean they can't make more movies. Like, Captain Marvel is set in the 90s, I believe. And so, let's say, maybe Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is set in the past, so Gamora can come back for that.
Yeah, we have no idea. I mean, as it is, the Captain Marvel movie, they were like, isn't Ronan the Accuser going to be in that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a prequel.
And he's dead, so yeah, you can do that. And
but there's
and also,
only so much you can do that.
There is, to a degree. I mean, like, look, they made a point of doing this shtick with the Time Stone where you showed Vision bite it and then have the time get reversed. And I feel like that happened for a pretty specific reason, which was, to sort of give you an inkling of why it is that Dr. Stephen Strange was so willing to give up the Time Stone in the first place. And B, to say, like, hey, look, don't forget, you could do time stuff with the Time Stone. That's what it's there for, so that they can utilize it later. It just feels like a breadcrumb.
Well, you mentioned Stephen Strange giving up the Time Stone, and I think that is true. And so he knew why he had to do it.
Because he saw one universe where it worked, and that was what he did in that universe.
Right, but what I'm saying is this. Like, that is the one that he makes a sacrifice, like, knowing that. A lot of this movie is, the moral lesson is, kill your friends and loved ones, because that will save the universe.
Huh.
Right? Like, I mean, we're now spoiling things, but Star-Lord kind of tries to kill Gamora, but got bubbles coming out of his gun, so he tries. But look, Scarlet Witch, whatever, like, you, if she killed Vision way earlier, this stuff doesn't go down. Right? There's a lot of, this movie over and over and over again puts people in the position of, you either sacrifice your friend, and or you let the universe live. And I know Captain America says, and we don't trade, you know, we don't trade with evil or whatever it is. But let's be honest, if they're superheroes, they should get it, you know, let your friends bite it and let the whole universe live.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the Marvel way.
That's hurtful. Here, can I ask you something?
Am I right, though?
Well, let me ask you this question. If you had to kill me.
Yes.
Just, wow.
That's a very Thanosian point of view.
I wouldn't do it to you.
I'm not saying that's an easy choice to make. I'm saying that it's kind of a weak story point for them to constantly have to go make that sacrifice or not.
I feel like this movie throughout, like story wise, there's a lot of shorthand where there shouldn't necessarily be. I mean, the thing I've brought up before is like the four hench people of Thanos, or the children of Thanos.
This is
right?
A good they point you made.
Like, who are they? I walked out. I could not. They play a big part in the plot. I could not name them if you held a gun to my head. I called them Bad Hulk, Wizard Guy, Night Elf from Warcraft.
They all look like they're out of Warcraft.
But I guess Proxima Midnight is the character, which you know if you read the comics.
I had no idea.
Yeah, this movie does not tell you anything about them. It just presents them, and you're supposed to care. And there's a lot of that because of, I think, the backlog of story that we've had. There's a lot of just like, we don't need to bother with this because people are just going to come along with whatever we do. And the movie delivers a lot of great fan service in terms of, oh, I wanted to see Thor do this, or I wanted to see the Guardians do this, or I want to see Captain America team up with Black Panther and Okoye and Wakanda and all that stuff. And those are great. But like, because it does so much of that, it doesn't do a lot of the things that a story in a movie necessarily should do.
It's always blown my mind that people who read comic books, and I read a ton of comic books as a kid. I'm now getting back into them, but I'm not like a stranger to the medium. But people want to see the things they've seen on the page happen in real life. They need that. Or the thing that like they've imagined in their head as fan fiction or whatever to happen in real life. And to me, I'm not the producer on the movie. I'm not the writer on the movie. I have nothing to do with it except that I get to see it. And so I would much rather have the story play out the way the experts who make the movie want it to play out versus delivering on some expectation from a book I read 20 years ago or from a movie I saw 5 years ago. So I think this movie has a ton of fan service because they're delivering on those things that fans want.
Right.
And Marvel knows what they're doing. I mean, they've done this for, you know, 10 years and made so much money. But I think then this movie is the epitome, and it is so many movies added up that there's a lot of fan service, like you said, and I never understood why fans need that versus just wanting to be taken on a ride, because I like wouldn't have thought of any of this myself. I wouldn't have thought of Star Wars myself, so I should let them continue to write these things.
Well, and Star Wars is an interesting comparison because I think that it's I feel like this movie is almost the anti The Last Jedi in certain ways. Like The Last Jedi said, I'm going to take your expectations about what a Star Wars movie is and what this particular Star Wars movie is and subvert them in a lot of ways.
People hated it.
And well, for better or worse.
They sure did.
Yeah, some people were really upset with that.
I loved it, by the way.
I think this movie
it made way less money than you would have expected it to do after Force Awakens.
I loved it too, but I think this movie does the opposite of that. It says, I know what you want and I am going to give it to you 100%. And again, for better or worse, I think a lot of people are really going to find that satisfying. And I prefer, I guess, when my expectations get subverted. Speaking about Legion, that's one thing Legion does really well, is it takes a lot of the things you expect out of a superhero show and out of that particular story and says, we're going to go in a different direction. And I enjoy that surprise. I think that the big surprise here, I think, comes at the end, with just in terms of who dies when Thanos snaps his fingers. Other than that, it's not a very surprising film.
I'm going to do something that might put you guys to sleep. I'm going to make a sports metaphor. All right. So just wait.
I like sports.
So a lot of times you got these teams that they've gone on a big winning streak, right? They've won a couple championships. Their players, Hall of Famers, All-Stars, whatever it is, they start getting older, right? And so they decide, we got to do one of two things. We can double down and trade our minor league prospects for some reinforcements, and we can make a couple more runs at the title. This is the best thing we can do immediately. That we can maybe, you know, the Mets did a few years ago, you know, and the Red Sox did a few years ago, and sometimes it works. The San Francisco Giants did that this year. Sometimes that works. Sometimes it starts falling apart, you know, and like you win a championship, but then your team's really old, and you don't have any good minor leaguers, and you need to eventually start over. Some teams decide we're not going to let ourselves have a bunch of bad seasons because we're going to have these old players. We're going to get rid of the guys before they become super old and unproductive for minor leaguers, right? And so what Marvel did, they went with option A. They just doubled down, and they're going to make a ton of money. You know, they are lucky to also have these other movies franchises that are just getting started. So maybe they can pull off. But what Star Wars did was they kind of burned it all down to start from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I prefer that artistically. I know you prefer that, Adam. But Marvel did not do that because I guess they make so much money. It's hard to do that.
I mean, look, I think it's also a sign of the times, you know? I mean, you look, the last two movies that The Rock put out, people liked because they were mindless and simple. And
Rampage was great.
I loved Rampage, and I loved Jumanji, but they are just big, dumb, happy, fun movies where everybody comes out feeling good at the end. A lot of action, and it all pays off in a positive way. That's Dwayne Johnson's bread and butter, and he's doing it at the right time because people are desperate. They need it. And I think that Avengers is, this particular iteration is very much, despite its negative energy, like this is the thing, like it ends on this dark note, but you know that this is going to get reversed because you're not a fool, and most people are going to watch it, and even if you have like these very strong reactions in the theater, you're still going to walk out knowing that most of it's going to get reversed. They're going to save the day, and it's mostly about these characters you love coming in and having these fun little fan moments where they get to be goofy together and you get to have a laugh and it's a little bit heartwarming and yada yada, because that's what people need. Right. I like The Last Jedi. I like to think that it's an intellectual film. It's definitely, if I had to watch one of these movies again, it's not a competition for me. I can watch The Last Jedi all the live long day. I get something out of it every time. Whereas I don't know if I would watch Infinity War more than twice, most, max. But it provides a very specific service during a time when people are feeling pretty goddamn dour. And really miserable.
Why are people sad?
But I think that's what makes this interesting, because it does, like, for 90% of the runtime, it does do that. You know, it's fun. It's, the characters are funny, and there's a lot of interaction, and you get to see superheroes fighting and mix and match and all that stuff. And then at the end, it just buttons it with a real downer. But I mean, even if you know that more stuff is coming, I mean, it's a bleak ending. So
I'll make a comparison.
Are people going to walk out of this like jazzed?
I don't know. I think so. But here's the thing. People felt very strongly. I'll draw a comparison to King Kong, the original King Kong.
Don't bring up Skull Island.
I'm bringing up just the original movie.
Okay, thank God.
This is the original King Kong movie.
Okay.
Beauty killed the beast.
Right. It has a very dark energy at the end, but it's a big spectacle movie. It came out at a time which was the Depression. People were very stressed for a lot of reasons. People were depressed both financially and, you know, personally, emotionally. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, like, I don't think people really trusted each other. I don't think people trusted the government. I don't think people trusted anything at the time. And so as a result, they needed stuff like King Kong. And just because King Kong has a sad ending doesn't mean that it's not ultimately still about the spectacle. That movie made a lot of money. And also the other thing about that movie is that it was really long. Because people wanted to feel like they were getting their dollar value because it was easier to come by a dollar. So, like, they wanted to have a place to go and they wanted to feel like they were getting more bang for their buck. And so I think that, honestly, I look at this movie and I think it is just like that.
Oh, interesting. Absolutely. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with that. And I don't think that it was a bad move by Marvel. I'm just kind of contrasting the two types of movies.
Yeah, and I think a lot of my, like, honestly, I keep saying this. I think a lot of people are going to love this. I think the reason a lot of my dislike for it is because I tend to prefer more intimate stories. I mean, the movies I talk about, Logan, Black Panther, what was the other one? Like, Unbreakable is one of my favorite superhero movies. And it's very smaller scale. It's very, like, about characters. And, like, Black Panther has big war scenes, but it also has the scene where the two guys fight in a pool, you know, and it's two characters who have been developed and have motivations that are understandable and everything. And I will take that any day over another scene of heroes fighting a horde of faceless CGI minions. I am so over that now, and that is so it's interesting with Infinity War because it has a huge scene like that. We've seen that in the trailers where, you know, Captain America and Black Panther are leading the charge against these putties. My reference to Mighty Morphin from Power Rangers, but it also has a lot of like Thanos versus these people, Thanos versus this combination of characters, and those to me are interesting because Thanos is a developed character who's given you know, great importance in the story. There's stakes there. And it's a smaller group of heroes that we can kind of keep track of who's doing what and how their powers are going to be used in this situation. And those are really compelling to me. It's just the let's watch War Machine blow up a dozen of these like goons all at once. I find it so tiring.
I think another point to make about that, with that in mind, is that I always think about these movies that they're not made for me. They're like a critic or journalist, they're made for mass audiences, and not to even say mass American audiences only want that, but most of the money that this movie makes, no matter how well it does in America, will be international, and it's a whole lot easier to translate a few lines during a giant battle than it is to translate, you know, Interplay or when Thor calls Rocket a rabbit. You know, like there's some things that just don't translate, and I think that they got to keep that in mind. They got to remember that their most of their money is going to come from across the world.
Yeah, I mean, I always think about, so there were two animated films that came out a couple years ago. One, for me, was great, and the other one, which I couldn't stand. One was Pixar's Inside Out, and the other was Minions. It's a personal taste thing. I know the guy that made Minions. I just personally didn't like the movie. It's not a dig on him. It's just personal taste. But I think that Inside Out is a very complex narrative where it's trying to make you understand like how the nature of emotions work and how your brain works. And it's has an emotional story, yes, but it's very complex. It did great domestically. It did not do great abroad. Minions is, I mean, they're just these little noise monsters. They're doing goofy things. You don't need to know anything at all. It's like a difference between like making a silent movie and making the first talkie, right? Like there's a lot of work that you have to go through to translate like words and deal with dubbing and all that stuff. Whereas a silent movie is just we'll just put the card with the words on it and the appropriate language and that's it. It's much easier to do that. You know what I mean? And I think this is the same thing, right? This movie, you're right, is going to make a lot of money. Like, that's where. Like, I think, honestly, Black Panther is going to do better domestically, potentially.
Sure.
But it definitely won't do better internationally. Like, this movie, you don't need to understand anything. Like, it's mostly battles. It's mostly goofy scenes. It's mostly spectacle. So if that's what you're looking for and you don't, like, yeah, I mean, like, look, if someone made Black Panther, but it was like in another language and I had to sit down and watch the subtitles, it would be really hard for me because I would be like, what is the nuance that I'm missing? I know I'm not going to get the same quality. That is the challenge of watching
from, like, your culture. If you were from
that's the thing is you have to make a commitment, right? If I see a foreign film, I'm not just watching the film. Like I watch it and then I have to sit down and do the work, right? I like will look it up and read interviews and like look and see what the cultural impact is in order for me to really appreciate it. You don't have to do any of that with Avengers whatsoever. So yeah, it will absolutely make money for that reason and that reason alone.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I think that a lot of people will get something out of that, of the element of, you know, I've put in 10 years of work, not work, 10 years of investment in these characters. And this is the reward for that, in a manner of speaking, is getting to see them on screen doing the things I would like to see them doing.
Was there anything that like, I just realized I was thinking about like what my favorite moment of the film is, and I don't know if I can think of one. Do you have like a moment that was like a favorite for you? What you were like, wow, I really liked that. I really noticed that I enjoyed this sequence. I came out still thinking about that sequence because I liked it so much.
That's a tough call. I mean, there's a lot of little crowd-pleasing moments, and I think like for me, it was probably even just the character beat of when Thor first meets the Guardians.
Yeah.
And there's all that interaction and Star-Lord is trying to like exert his, you know, alpha status by imitating Thor's voice and the interplay between those characters. Because again, you know, I think they've found the perfect tone for Thor now, which is this little less self-serious thing. And it really just blended right. And especially because I think what comes right before that in the story, if I remember correctly, is like super dark. So then they cut to, you know, space and it's the 70s music playing as the I can't remember the name of their ship now, the Guardians, and I'm going to kill myself for that later. But
wow,
But anyway, so they cut to that, and I could almost feel the audience like exhaling. It was like, oh, now we're back to fun Marvel, you know. And so that dynamic with that group of characters, I thought worked really well and was fun to watch.
I would concur.
See, and I can't. That's the thing, is that I can't pick one. Because like, I was thinking about how much I like Thor, and I like, in theory, the idea of Thor and Rocket and Groot is fun. But the sequence where they go to get the hammer quest. Is such a fetch quest.
Yeah.
It's not about a goddamn thing at all. Like, who cares? He gets a new fake eye because Rocket's thing is that he steals...
body parts.
He steals body parts, which is really weird. And yeah, and then they go and they meet up with the gigantic Peter Dinklage, and they forge a new Beta Ray Bill thing for
it's
him.
It's Beta Ray Bill's hammer.
I was mad that Beta Ray Bill wasn't in the movie.
I'm always mad that Beta Ray every movie.
I really
that Beta
thought
Ray
for
Bill,
a second, if Beta Ray Bill had shown up in the movie, that would have been my favorite.
Every
moment.
Movie that Beta Ray Bill is not in, whether it's Marvel or not, makes me angry.
Yeah, next Thor movie. At this point, he has to show up. He has to be in the next Thor movie.
Annihilation. I was like, why isn't Beta Ray Bill in that film?
Wow. Bold.
Yeah.
This is my point. This is what I'm saying, is that I can't... Like, there are moments, like, some of the... I had strong emotional reactions to some of the deaths, even though I knew that they are probably not going to last.
Right.
But would I be like, that's my fave? Like, is my fave when Black Panther dies? No.
Yeah.
Is my fave when Gamora dies? No. I could tell you what my most shocking moment was, which is when Red Skull showed up.
Yeah, that was weird.
That came out of nowhere.
What?
Of all the characters from the previous MCU, I mean, maybe if Abomination had shown up, I would have been like, that's a little, I had not expected that. But Red Skull was just a total shock.
I mean, did they?
I want Mickey Rourke to show up.
Wow. He's not.
Oh, well, yeah, okay. He was in at the MCU. That's right.
There you go.
Was Whiplash.
There you go.
But and like,
it was definitely mind-blowing. Was not expecting that. Like, that'd be like if Sam Rockwell showed up.
Yeah.
It would be really weird.
Just all these Iron Man 2 villains showing up.
Yeah. Literally anything from one of the worst Marvel movies by far.
But that was a surprise. And it's not Hugo Weaving, which I think was a bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
You can't really tell because he's in the makeup and everything. But that was, I think that was the most... The callback that got the most reaction, the biggest reaction in the theater I was in, was when Captain America was like, I know a place, and cut to Wakanda.
Oh yeah,
everybody went apeshit. So that was fun.
They really held off on Cap too and his people this time, I think.
And that's the thing that's interesting, is a lot of the marketing has set up that Captain America, Black Panther play like big
barely
parts
in the thing.
Barely in the movie. Captain America has maybe a dozen lines. Maybe.
I assume that he's going to be the biggest part of the movie.
I'm sure. Yeah.
What did you think about Scarlet Witch and Vision?
That was stupid.
Wow, really? I wouldn't go that far. I just was not really, like, it was fine.
He's a
but
robot
it's not the
man.
Movie doesn't have time. That's
He's
the thing,
a
is
robot.
That, no, there
man.
Is an interesting.
You're a robot man.
The thing is, there is an interesting story to tell there, but the movie does not have time for it.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It's like we get told that they have this emotional thing and that's happening, and that's great. We don't see it. We don't get to spend time with it. It's just kind of expected that we accept it because it's time to move on to the next big thing. And so that
killed him.
That's, you know, like, yeah, it's an emotional. And the thing, I got mad because it's an emotional moment when she does make the decision to kill him in the cause of the greater good. And then instantly, oops, oh, by the way, whole thing you invested in for like a minute and a half just now means nothing. Like, it's that, it hurts. And I get the point. They're like turning the knife a little bit on you. But it's,
see, and I liked that stuff.
Yeah.
I liked it personally. Yeah, I don't know.
It's fine. You're just wrong. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, so there's that. I mean, yeah.
This is my point is that there is no one thing I would point to and be like, wow.
That was the
head
moment.
Head and shoulders, that was the moment. That was so great. I could watch that scene over and over again.
I mean,
the huge bowl
of ice cream.
The biggest thing that people are going to talk about is
yes,
the end,
ice
you know,
cream.
Of Thanos wiping out half life on the universe and that actually happening. That's the moment that's going to... be the thing that people talk about, I think, from this film more than anything else.
And then, I guess we could argue that the one we'll talk about it now is the post-credit sequence.
Yeah.
The one where I was told, wait, don't leave the theater yet.
Thank God.
Thank goodness that person spoke up.
Yeah. I was hoping for a total troll, like at the end of Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh, this is what my
unfortunately,
wife,
that didn't pay off.
This is what my wife Raven said. She was like, here, like we were sitting there watching it. And of course, at that point, like everyone was like talking all throughout the credits. And my wife was like, here's what I want. I want it to like start and then immediately just like turn to dust and fly away. And that's it. And there's nothing. I was like, that's good.
That's cruel.
I wish they had done that. That would have been amazing.
I wish they had brought everyone they had killed back to life in the post-credit sequence.
Oh, yeah. And they were like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Why not? Just a couple minutes later. Yeah.
And just as JK underneath, like.
Yeah, I mean, it's I guess we can talk about it. It's
Maria
Hill. And
I'm glad she's back.
Yeah,
she's
not. No, she's dead.
Yeah, but like, you know, time.
Everybody loves Kobe Smulders. Everybody loves her.
Yeah. My thing is, I think it's amazing that Samuel Jackson has been able to get so much mileage out of the way he says one word.
Yeah.
And all anybody wants is to see Samuel Jackson say that mother.
Word that we can't say on this podcast.
And so it was, the man has many, many other skills, and that's not only his only skill, but
he is better at than anybody else that has ever lived in the course of human history.
And of course, the big payoff in the post-credit scene is he's getting ready to dissolve and he's got to get his beeper message out. And it turns out that the person he's beeping is Captain Marvel, because the Captain Marvel logo shows up on the screen.
But the funny thing is that her movie is going to be set in the 90s. So like, it's just more like,
so we got to find out where she's been.
The post-credit scene on the Captain Marvel movie is going to be her getting that message modern day. I bet you.
Wait, when is that movie coming out?
Next year.
Okay. Oh, wait, is it actually coming out before?
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what the order is
There's Ant-Man and Wasp, and then there's Captain Marvel, and then there's Avengers.
Oh, so there's only two next year.
I believe that's true. No, well...
Wait, what else is there?
Because then after that will be... is it Guardians?
I don't even know.
Anyway, the point being, I think...
All right, so it's
I think Captain Marvel will be in the Black Panther slot.
So it's Captain M, the Game Master, and then Avengers.
Yes, exactly.
Avengers.
And then...
Or... whatever the one's called. That's also kind of surprised that they still haven't revealed
the Jackson spinoff Star Wars movie.
And somebody made a big deal about the fact that, like, instead of saying the Avengers will return at the end, it said Thanos will return.
Yeah.
Kind of cool.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I don't know.
I guess I go into these movies, I don't expect a ton, because here's the thing. I read about this constantly, right? We talk about this constantly. And so I'm both more aware of everything that's happening in the industry, and I'm also, so like, I'm makes me more informed, but also makes me like less excited in a way, because I've taken so much of it in. So I guess like I'm not the best critic for it. And overall, I enjoyed it. I think it's not revolutionary, to me, I think, the way I would ultimately say it.
Yeah, I mean, again, I just, like, to me, it's like that long period of the late 70s where it was lots of crazy disaster movies like Towering Inferno and stuff like that was, you know, sort of like a turn, like, from what they were doing before, which was, you know, like Dog Day Afternoon and stuff like that. You know, I think we live in a time of pluralism where all of these things are available at all times, always. I just think that these movies are getting a lot of play because, genuinely, I just think we kind of need them. Like, Black Panther was telling a nuanced story, and Eric Killmonger is a villain. You could understand where he was coming from, but why he was still wrong in a very nuanced, long, drawn-out conversation. And, you know, I think that there are people that want that. But I think the world as a whole just really needs a movie wherein... you understand that, like, Thanos is bad and genocide is bad, but you kind of have a brief flirtation of understanding why even a good person might feel that way. We just really need that simple moral.
I don't know that they took that many moral – that they thought about it that much. I mean, if Iron Man
I think it's still the nature of art imitating life.
But then Avengers came out in 2012. Things were going pretty – I mean, way better than they are now. And so that movie made like $1.5 billion. I think we are lucky. I think it's incidental, and maybe they thought a little bit about like what the country needs, but I think that this is
I don't think it happens that way. I think it's that for the most part, art just naturally ends up imitating life or sort of responds to life. And I just think that's all it is. I look at this movie and I think it's big and dumb and fun. If you've been watching these movies all along, yes, you get this one thing. If you're seeing it internationally, you don't need to know anything. Yes, also there is this element of we need a very simple moral.
I think the thing that's interesting about Thanos here is that they do develop the character.
They do.
But to me, they never ask you to sympathize with him. And that's like, even as he explains himself, he's still coming across as genocidal.
In the moment of Gamora where he knows that he has to throw her and he's got genuine tears in his eyes, I do think at that moment, maybe you're not asked to think that he's a good person, but you are forced to confront the fact that he does have genuine care for her.
I don't think that's a sympathetic thing, because he's still, you know, that at that point he's still getting ready to kill her. So it's like, to me, it's like the difference between, I guess, I've been beating the drum for this a lot as well recently, which is the idea that you need to have sympathize with the villain in order for them to be a good villain.
Sure.
And the example I always pull out is Darth Vader, because in Star Wars, A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, there was no effort to make it like, oh, Darth Vader, let me understand his motivation and really feel what he feels like. No, he was a kick-ass, just bad guy. And you can do that. And I think that this movie walks that line with Thanos between trying to get you to really sympathize with what he does and just saying, you know what, he's a bad guy and he needs to be stopped. And I think, I don't know how successful it is. I think that it's a little bit of middle ground. They almost could have gone more in the other direction of making you sympathize with him.
I don't think you play the daddy card unless you want someone to sympathize with
him. Yeah, that's the thing. That was what it was. That's the reason why the Gamora subplot exists. Otherwise, you would feel no sympathy for him. And I'm not saying you do feel sympathy for him, but the reason I felt it was definitely because he has a moment wherein he feels he's being tested about whether or not this is the right thing to do. And because they talk about, you know, Titan and how it was bad and how, like, he realized that unless something was done, it's just that his solution is insane. His solution is bonkers to say, like, we should just kill a lot of people and that'll take care of it. Yeah. Like, here's the truth. If we kill a whole bunch, like, if we just indiscriminately got rid of 50% of people on Earth, would certain things very technically get better? Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
But half the people would be dead.
Right.
That would be real bad.
My solution is planetary colonization. You offload half the population to another planet.
Stay tuned to the Expanse.
Yeah, they're fine. Meanwhile, less demand on the resources. So Thanos,
next up on sci-fi.
Think about that. It's a big universe, man. There's a lot of room out there. And, you know, and this is where we're just talking about one dimension. Like, you want to say in the other dimensions, there's plenty of. So I think that's the
another dimension.
So, yeah. I mean, listen, like, I don't know. And it's just weird. I feel like there's never been a movie like this before in the sense of it's impossible to evaluate it on its own.
No, well, you know the thing, this is why I'm so dubious of it. That's the thing, is because what I thought of was the second Matrix movie. Because you get to the end of the second Matrix movie and you're like, well, I can't really judge this until I see the Matrix Revolutions, right? It was Revelations and Revolutions.
Revolutions. Reloaded,
yeah.
Revolutions.
Reloaded and Revolutions, yeah. So I was like, I can't judge Reloaded until I see this next one.
It's not so much a movie as a big event.
It is.
It's an episode.
It's
an annual.
An annual. Good call.
There you go.
I was going to say, it's like if you were watching 10 seasons of a show and you were like, and we're finally getting to an actual season finale. Like, it was 10 years of no season finale and now here it is.
Yeah.
And so it's got to be 6 hours long or whatever.
But the first half of a season finale.
Yeah. It's so weird. It's so weird to be waiting a whole nother year for it. But yeah, I mean, I can't quite qualify it other than to say that it's like going to see Avengers, the roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
More so than watching a movie. Yeah.
But then, like, the roller coaster just, like, kind of spins around for a while in different weird directions without going forward.
Yep. Anyway, that's that. So there you go. That's what we thought about it. I'm glad we talked it through.
Mm-hmm.
It was like
this
a good
therapeutic for me.
It was a good therapy session. So we want to know what you think about it. Let us know. And please, if you're listening to this podcast and you are not subscribed to it, please subscribe to this podcast. And there's also now this huge family of Sci-Fi Wire podcasts that are available to you. I hope that you would listen to Strong Female Characters, The Churn, and the Colony podcast that'll be coming back. And then also
The Phantom Files.
Well, we just did one with Will Wheaton. What's the next one going to be?
I have one with Dean Devlin coming out. We talked about Godzilla 98.
Oh, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
You know, I have a lot of opinions about the 1998 Godzilla movie that I won't say on this podcast.
Last night we recorded one with the guy who co-founded Titmouse, the animation studio. That was a lot of fun. We talked about T-Pain being a huge animation fan.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it's...
So you should be checking out the next two episodes at the very least. But there's also a battery. There's like back catalog.
There's almost 30 episodes.
So there you go. Please listen to those. And before we wrap up, where can people find each of you on the internet? Adam.
People can find me on Twitter and Instagram at RockTheFaces.
First, I want to say aliens, no hard feelings, if you are listening. Thank you.
Yeah, they had to make it through an hour 10 to get to that. So he was hoping they have good attention.
As long as
span.
One alien listens and says, wait... Guys, so no hard feelings to the aliens. You can find me on Twitter at Jordan Zacharin.
And my name is Danny Roth, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary also with one N. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week, and we'll see you again next week.